Here we have John in the wilderness, and he's at the Jordan River, which is a really important place in the story of Israel, right? Jordan is the place that divides Israel from the rest of the world. When Joshua came into the promised land, what was the river that he crossed, right? He crossed over the Jordan into the promised land. And this is what, so that's the place where everybody knows that's the place of Israel. And anyone on the outside of that, well, they're something else, other. John has this vision that something and someone is coming. This is Advent, right? Remember last week we talked about how Advent is the season where we get to practice waiting and watching and bearing witness to the coming of Jesus in our lives and all the many ways that Jesus comes to us. John has this sense that something big is on the way. And so he goes out and he's proclaiming this to the people, and somehow or other, this John, he gathers everybody in. Everybody wants to hear what he has to say. Now, I can't imagine people coming into the church here and me saying, "You brood of vipers, what are you doing here?" Right? I mean, this is not in any kind of church growth manual. Right? But somehow or other, everybody is drawn to this message. And the message is the kingdom of heaven has come near. Which really means the Holy One has come near. This is like, in one way, what he's saying is, you know how it is in the Holy of Holies in the temple when God draws near to the Holy of Holies? That's coming for everyone. God will dawn on all of us. That is an amazing and somewhat frightening announcement, right? I mean, really, because think about the Holy of Holies. Only the high priest gets to go in there, right? And that's scary, and no one else is allowed in. In fact, what they used to do was they used to tie a rope around the high priest's ankle in case, for some reason, he died in the Holy of Holies. Serious. This is serious. They could pull him out because nobody else was allowed in there. This is a little bit scary. And John, he doesn't say, "Don't worry, it's not going to be so bad." He doesn't say that at all. He says, "It's going to be fire, and it's going to be hard, and it's going to be difficult." And he says to the Pharisees and the Sadducees, who have their place in the system, right? And they kind of like the place in the system, right? And so he's saying to them, "Wait a minute, why are you all coming out here? You bear fruit worthy of repentance." In other words, things aren't going to be the same. The system that you hope is going to be in place is going to be thrown down. And you can't keep working to save your positions. So, here's John, and he's really arguing. He's saying that this one who is coming is got his winnowing fork in his hand. He's going to clear the threshing floor, and he's going to separate the wheat from the chaff. He's going to burn the chaff with unquenchable fire. This really sounds threatening. And so the bearing fruit that befits repentance is really important. Well, what is that fruit? Well, ironically, the fruit, I think, is the way of Jesus. Later on in the Gospel of Matthew, John is going to look at Jesus and he's going to send messengers. He's going to say, "Are you the one who's to come, or should we look for another?" And I think he's got his fingers crossed that we should look for another. Because Jesus isn't bringing fire and brimstone. He's bringing gather them in, forgiveness. He's bringing, well, as Jesus himself says, "Tell John what you see and hear." Right? The blind receive sight. The lame walk. Lepers are cleansed. The poor have good news preached to them. The dead are raised. Everybody's being gathered in. All those people who looked to be on the outside, the blind, the lame, those who were of no value in society, those are the ones that Jesus is gathering in. And John's looking at that going, is this really the guy I've been preaching about? So, I read this great article by a guy named David French. He's a evangelical, I think, I dare say a progressive evangelical. I don't know if that's a paradox or not. He thinks, I don't know if he even would accept that. But anyway, I love his stuff, and he's a very, very religiously conservative guy and just really loves the church. And his church is the Southern Baptist Convention. All right. And he was writing this article about the struggle of their sexual misconduct struggle in the Southern Baptist Convention. All right, pastors who are abusing their authority, and you know, and this is not a trash of them, because the Lutheran Church and every other church has problems like this as well. But he was writing about his people. I don't have a horse in that race, but. So he was saying that what is the fruit that bears repentance in these situations? These higher up people who have been confessed to having had terrible affairs and being very abusive in their positions, and he says, and now those same people are asking us to put them back in the positions they had before. To let them be pastors again. To let them be leaders again. So they were saying, basically, trust me. I'm different now. And David French argues, he says, you know, forgiveness is really good. But that doesn't necessarily mean that the person who is repenting so that they can get their position back. As I think John might be talking to the Pharisees, don't come out here looking like you're repenting and you're going to go right back doing what you've been doing the whole time. And then he offers an alternative. And this guy is a guy in Britain, John Pomona, what is his name? I can't remember his last name. Pomona, and he's Italian too. He's an English guy. And with an Italian last name that I can't remember. And that's something. Anyway, he was a World War II veteran hero. He went into parliament, into politics. He ended up being Secretary of State for England. All right? This is higher up. And he had during that time, he had an affair with a young woman, which was bad enough. And then he had another affair, and it ends up he had an affair with a Russian naval officer, a woman, who was in the Russian Navy. And it was just a scandal. This is in the 50s. And so David French describes the whole thing, and he says, and this John guy, he repented. And he said, I will never again bother the public with me. And he went off and he moved to the east side of London to serve the poor. And he didn't do it with a lot of fanfare. He didn't do it with, you know, all of this publicity about it. He just went and did it. And he did it for like 50 years. Right? Bearing fruit that befits repentance. What a beautiful example, huh? This guy did this thing, confessed this thing, and said, I am no longer to take office. I'm going to do this, and I'm going to bear fruit that befits repentance. And he worked with the people in the east end of London, the poorest of the poor, and helped them for his life to work. And interestingly, that's exactly what I think John was trying to get at when he says, bear fruit that befits repentance. Right? not coming out, like I said, and showing like you're repenting and then going back to the way you were. But no, doing something very different, changing direction. That's what repentance means. It means turning around. And that's what this guy did. In his article, French says, can you imagine any politician doing that today? Right? But what an incredible example. And the irony of it, I think, is that while John was skeptical that Jesus was the one to come, this guy's example was precisely living in the way of Jesus. The poor have good news proclaimed to them. Right? This guy goes and lives among the poor and works with them and for them. So I'm thinking about that. And then I'm also thinking about a guy that I met in Seattle. I went yesterday to Virginia and I did to help Emma move. And while I was, Emma had parked my car somewhere and I had lost my car. And while I was wandering around trying to find my car, you can't imagine how many black Subarus there are in Seattle. It's just unbelievable. Right? I'm trying to find my car, run into this guy who's clearly homeless, and he says to me, afternoon. I said, well, good afternoon. I said, how you doing? He goes, blessed. And I said, all right, that's great, wonderful. He says, yep. I am blessed. I said, thanks be to God. He says, are you a believer? And I said, I am a believer. Now, in my head, I said all kinds of other things, too. Like you know, I don't need to bother you with what went on in my head. But I knew what he meant. Do you believe in Jesus? I believe in Jesus, right? You know. And I said, yes, I am a believer. And he said, well, thanks be to God. Well, that's great. And I'm like, I'm waiting for him to offer, to say, you know, you got a $10, you got whatever. No, he wasn't, none of that, right? Somebody had already proclaimed the good news of Jesus to this guy. And he was content with that. He loved that. And wanted me to share in it too. And so he finally says, well, it's good to find another believer, right? It's good to talk to believers. And I said, yeah, it is. It's really beautiful. And he says, and I said, and you know what's really beautiful? And he said, what's that? And I said, the times when I can't muster up enough to believe, and God believes in me. Mm-hmm. And he went, oh, man. Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. That's right. And then he shook my hand, and we blessed each other, and that was that, right? The poor have good. This is Jesus doing. This is Jesus's witness in the world, right? The poor have good news proclaimed to them, and man, for that guy, it was good news. So I'm thinking about that, and I'm also thinking about the lame shall walk. Because this week, first week of Advent, which I think is very appropriate, my Aunt Trudy died. 15 years ago, my Aunt Trudy had a massive stroke. The whole left side of her body was left paralyzed. And she sat in a wheelchair for 15 years. And she used to crochet. And she figured out how to crochet one-handed. For those of you who crochet, imagine that's pretty cool, right? She had this thing where she could just, with one hand, she would crochet. But she could never smile. And so her daughter wrote this beautiful announcement the other day on Facebook, and Virginia showed it to me, and I got to read it. It was quite beautiful. And my Aunt Trudy was, when she lived in Greensboro, North Carolina. When I went to college in Greensboro, North Carolina, when I was homesick, I went to my Uncle Eddie and Aunt Trudy's house. Right. Yeah. And then Virginia started joining me to go into Uncle Eddie and Aunt Trudy's house. And over the years, we have received amazing hospitality from them. And they've just been wonderful. And Aunt Trudy was like the kindest, sweetest person that I think I've known. She's just a wonderful soul. I mean, I would call her up and say, what are you all having for dinner? Oh, come on over. You know. So, anyway, so I'm thinking about the lame shall walk, right? Because I was writing back to her daughter, Tracy, and I said, and now may your mom dance in the company of the saints. She's no longer bound to a wheelchair. She's no longer unable to smile. She's no longer unable to use her arm. And that to me is just this beautiful, beautiful fulfillment of the promise. And it also is the fulfillment of the dead shall rise. This poor woman in her chair, unable to move. And now she's gathered into God. And I find that to be very comforting and a fulfillment of that promise. So John is full of bluster and full of fire and full of warning and all that stuff. But the main thing is the fruit, he says, that we bear, it really, that fruit that I don't even think he's thinking about what kind of fruit. He's saying bear fruit that befits repentance. And it ends up that that fruit looks a whole lot like the one he has proclaimed, Jesus. And people following Jesus. So John, dear soul, he too could have been Italian. A lot of opinions. But he calls forth, he evokes something. He does not exactly know what. It ends up looking like Jesus. And you and I get to see it and bear witness to it as Jesus comes to us again.